Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we always like it when someone who comes on the show then goes on to win a Nobel Prize. And it's happened again. Economist Peter Diamond was just awarded a 2010 Nobel Prize in Economics for his very timely research on economic policy, the housing market, and unemployment. He was last on this show in October of 2008 to explain the realities of our Social Security system. Here's a clip from that appearance.
The projection of Social Security is that there isn't enough revenue to pay all of the benefits in the law through the 75 years they normally look at.
But he doesn't want people to unnecessarily freak out. And, of course, there hasn't been a big fix to Social Security since. Here we are 2 years later in another election season, and Social Security reform is on our minds again. So our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series topic today is, true or false, Social Security is easy to fix. Peter Diamond is also the author of Pension Reform, A Short Guide, now out in paperback. And he's here now to talk about it all, his Nobel Prize, Social Security, and pension reform in a larger sense. And Peter Diamond, welcome back to WNYC, and congratulations.
Thank you, and thank you for having me back.
Tell us about your research that led to your Nobel Prize.
The way the labor market works is very different from the way we teach markets in introductory economics, where you say demand, supply, and you look for a price to clear the market. Every month in the U.S., there are millions of vacancies, millions of people landing new jobs, switching from one job to another, switching from unemployment to getting employment, going from, as we measure it, out of the labor force to being employed. And there are huge flows month by month, and the impact on unemployment is the difference, small relatively difference, between those finding jobs and those losing jobs and those entering. And so to think about the labor market, you really have to think about a process playing out over time, and that's inherently more complex if you want a mental framework that permits you to think about how different government policies might affect the different elements that you care about.
Do you think extended unemployment benefits keep people from looking for work? That seems to be the big debate in Congress, with many Republicans arguing that they do.
I think that with any kind of incentive that's created, the incentive does some good things and some bad things. Yes, there certainly are some people out there who are passing up job opportunities or passing up searching for jobs, because the benefits make the options available less attractive. But there are also lots of other people who are being helped get through a rough period when they don't have options. And those people, in turn, having more to spend, are helping to stimulate the economy. And those who wait sometimes, as a result, end up in better jobs, which are better matches and make the economy more productive. So there are pluses and minuses. It's true for pretty much any policy, and you got to weigh up the different sides. I think it's a mistake to think of the negatives right now as being particularly large. We're in a very rough patch in the economy. The economy has been growing, but not very fast. And there's a vulnerability here because of limited scope for more government actions. So I think it's important to keep whatever supports we have going.
Do you think your Nobel Prize was in any way political? Some people say that when Paul Krugman was given the Nobel Prize for economics last year, the Nobel Committee wanted to make a statement about, you know, the different views of economics out there, and that his, as a minority view in the United States, needed to get some support, and that similarly today, with all this pressure on unemployment benefits, that giving you the Nobel Prize is trying to make a political statement, not just an academic research or knowledge statement?
I know nothing about the internal reasoning of the prize committee, so I have no comment to offer.
All right. Let's get to Social Security and our 30 Issues in 30 Days true-false statement today is Social Security is easy to fix, true or false. And indeed, some people think there's a lot of demagoguing on Social Security, that it has problems, but those problems are relatively easy to fix, and people shouldn't be scared into overhauling our Social Security system. So take that true-false proposition explicitly. Do you think Social Security would be easy to fix?
True. Easy to fix, and in the current economic climate, the perfect thing for Congress to be addressing. Right now, we have an economy that's limping along. We don't want to do things that will slow it down. On the other hand, there's justifiable concern that for the long haul, the government debt is on track to get out of control. It's not imminent, but it's there for the long haul. And so there's this tension between addressing the short-run problems and the long-run problems. And the kind of Social Security fix that Peter Orszag and I laid out in our book fits perfectly this scenario, because it does nothing, or virtually nothing, to slow down the economy in the short run, and yet makes a large contribution to the amount of debt held by the public in the long run. And it's the debt held by the public that has to be rolled over and is the basis for the concern that the bond market may suddenly turn on the U.S. Not a concern I feel very strongly about, but at some point it would become a real concern. This is a moment to, A, do good policy, which is always an important part of doing policy, B, not harm the recovery, and C, reassure people that the U.S. has the ability to get things on track for the long run.
And listeners, we're going to give you a chance to ask a question directly to a Nobel Prize winner, Nobel Prize for Economics winner, Peter Diamond, just awarded, is with us as we talk about Social Security and whether it's easy to fix. And if you want to talk to Peter Diamond, call us up right now. We have about 10 minutes for this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your question to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, of course, this is in the context of the election, your appearance today, and we've heard a lot of political zingers, including last week in the debate between the two candidates for senator in Nevada, where Republican and Tea Party favorite Sharron Angle told Democrat and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to, quote, man up when it comes to Social Security. Here is a clip of each from their debate last Thursday.
Don't frighten people about Social Security. The deal that was made by President Reagan and Tip O'Neill is holding strong. The money is there, and it's taking care of our folks and will for the next 35 years I've just indicated.
Thank you, Mrs. Angle.
Man up, Harry Reid. You need to understand that we have a problem with Social Security. That problem was created because of government taking that money out of the Social Security Trust Fund. In 1990, you said it was stealing to use Social Security for anything but Social Security, and then you voted to take that Social Security money into the general fund where it could be generally used for generally anything.
Peter Diamond, I have a feeling you might agree with both of them from that exchange, do you?
Oh, no, I disagree with both of them from that exchange.
Huh.
First of all, Senator Reid is correct. There is enough money in there under the projection to go on paying benefits for quite a while. But the longer we wait to fix Social Security, the larger the changes have to be when we do fix it. So the sooner we address it, the smoother, the smaller the changes will be, and that would be better. So the factual statement he made was right, but to my mind, the right policy to infer from that is the sooner we get on it, the better.
And
as to the other one, the Social Security Trust Fund holds government bonds. I hold government bonds. When I lend to the government is borrowing from me because it needs the money to spend or to refinance outstanding bonds. To say the money is being spent on other things, what happens when anybody borrows? They borrow to spend it, and the lender knows it will be spent. It makes absolutely no sense to criticize the government because the bonds are spent. That's what they're for.
Mike in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Peter Diamond. Hello.
Hello. How is everybody today? I was calling to say that I believe that, isn't it possible that some of the problems that we're having with Social Security will be cured by growth? A lot of times I see articles that look at Japan and look at the economic problems that they're having, but one of the factors with Japan is that its population is shrinking and there is no immigration policy because it would really change Japanese society, where we are a society that, even though we're having problems now, we're amenable to immigration.
So economic growth, number one, and number two, a lot of immigration, which means more workers per retiree than some other countries have. Peter, what do you think about either of those?
First of all, economic growth helps the balance in Social Security, just as the terrible recession we've been through
and
hurts
it's not
the
our
long-run balance.
Economic growth is not our strong suit right now and may not be for some time to come, right?
And projections done by the Office of the Actuary about different plausible rates of long-run growth, what happens in a year or two doesn't really matter in a program that's open-ended like that. But yes, growth would help. It would take implausible levels of growth for the problem to go away. As to immigration, I think it's always important to base your policies on the most important aspect of them. Yes, immigration helps somewhat with Social Security problems. I say somewhat because the immigrant workers who pay taxes later on receive benefits. So the long-run impact is much smaller than one might think. But our immigration policy should be set around the primary concerns we have about immigration, both the advantages of getting new people in and the costs associated with integrating new people. And I think that we should focus on immigration per se, and the fact that it would have some impact on Social Security is the tail, not the dog.
Fabio in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, and great show as always.
Thank you.
My question concerns the fact that the ceiling now on payments for Social Security is, if I'm not wrong, $160,000 annual income. Would it be sufficient to raise that ceiling, and to what level? And second, since Social Security payments are not taxable in terms of income tax, would that, if the limit were to be raised, would that impact the revenues on income?
To help make us solve it, actually, aren't Social Security payments income taxable, depending on your total income?
The benefits are taxable. What he had in mind is when you pay your Social Security taxes, half of that is paid by the employer, half of that is paid by the employee.
I see.
So the half paid by the employer doesn't show up as part of your income. The half you pay as the employee does show up as part of your income. So, yes, there would be a small drop in income tax revenue connected with that. He's right that totally taking the cap off would cure the problem for the usual horizon, not in the long run, because increasing longevity will eventually cause more problems again. But this has never been part of the design of Social Security from the beginning, in part out of a sense of what's a fair balance, but in a redistributive system, how redistributive do you want to be, and in part reflective of an underlying political view that we want a program that most people feel they're getting a reasonable return on what they're paying in taxes. And there isn't a group that is really being taken advantage of and will politically oppose it. So that I'm very concerned about programs that, proposals that will totally flatten the benefits and make it look much more like a welfare program. As the late Wilbur Cohen was fond of saying, in the U.S., a program for poor people is a poor program. Social Security helps a huge number of people, and I think the fact that we have progressive benefit formula means both that people with higher incomes get more and that they get lower replacement rates. Those are two virtues as far as I'm concerned.
We have a few minutes left with this year's Nobel Prize for Economics winner, Peter Diamond, author of books including Pension Reform, A Short Guide, which is just out in paperback, and Saving Social Security, A Balanced Approach, which he wrote with Peter Orszag, who was President Obama's budget director. And Professor Diamond, the President's Debt Commission has been meeting in private and is expected to make its report in December. And reports are that Social Security reform will be a key part of these suggestions to reduce and eliminate the big national deficits and the debt. Reports say they're considering cuts to Social Security. What do you expect and what would you support?
They couldn't be doing their job if they weren't thinking about Social Security. I don't have any idea what kinds of alternatives they are looking at. In my book with Peter Orszag, we went for a balance between tax increases and benefit cuts. We added to it some benefit increases for low earners, for widows in need. And that, in part, we were drawing on the recommendations of the commission appointed by President Bush. I think it's useful to revisit some of their thoughts, but not all of them, not the individual accounts. And so if we get a proposal that is a combination of balanced combination of benefit decreases, tax increases, and it's all phased in slowly enough, I would look forward to supporting it. If we get one of these individual account proposals, which involve transfers of payroll tax revenue from the trust fund to individual accounts for the purchase of other assets, that increases the amount of debt held by the public and increases the risks of a backlash from the bond market rather than decreasing it. And I think in the current climate, that proposal, which I oppose for a variety of other reasons, there's a much stronger additional reason for opposing such proposals now.
We've just about run out of time, but in under a minute, can you give us a quick thought on private sector pensions? Your new book is Pension Reform, A Short Guide, and so much of the private pension system is under pressure. Companies eliminating pensions for many years now, going to 401ks. Can 401ks be a viable private retirement fund system for all Americans?
Many people have been decrying the decline of private defined benefit systems. And by private here, I'm not including the state and local and federal employee defined benefit. But I'm not one of them. I think corporate defined benefit plans have never been a good feature because they don't work well with labor mobility. We have a very mobile labor force. The amount of mobility has gone up greatly, and the backloading in the typical defined benefit plan works very badly for mobile workers. So I am, in fact, a fan of the switch over to 401ks, and in the book with Nick Barr, we talk about that. What we need, though, is better design in it, better design with what we now know, and I know there is significant research going on how to design, as it were, a default plan for a 401k. Mm-hmm. So somebody who doesn't want to think much about what's going on and wants reasonable security doesn't have to think about it and gets reasonable security. Perfect security isn't there, but it wasn't there before either.
Very interesting and very constructive. Peter Diamond, who just won the Nobel Prize for Economics, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me again.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.